Welcome to Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, a podcast for women in midlife and beyond. Here at Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, we talk about everything and anything to do with midlife. My name is Colleen.
My name is Bridget.
And today we are welcoming Harriet Powell, the author of The Menopause Monologues, Part 1 and Part 2. Today on the show, we had a great conversation with her about she talks about real life women and our real life stories. And Bridget definitely was sharing a lot with the hot flashes and stuff. So Bridget, you talk about her.
Well, Harriet, it was just a great conversation. And her books are really great, easy reads if you want just to feel a connection that you are not alone in this menopause experience.
You're definitely not.
Yes. And that's why Harriet started the book. Harriet's own experiences with menopause inspired her to compile the Menopause Monologues. And it's a collection of taboo-breaking stories by real women. So she was already a best-selling author. She had already written young adult books for ages like 9 through 12. And she was listening to a radio broadcast in England or in the UK where she is. They have a radio show, Woman's Hour, and it was a week dedicated to menopause. So she was listening to some of these and she said she actually had to pull the car over, which you'll hear about this in the story. So I won't go into the whole thing. But then that's what just kind of inspired her to begin this story and this collection of stories. So she just published all of these. She had one and she had so many in the first one that she did another one. So there's one and two, and we will have all the connections where you could find these, all the links in our show notes and on our webpage.
Yeah. So what story kind of stuck out to you in the book?
In the book, I was trying to think which one. I can't remember which author. I've got to find it. I have the book right in front of me. But the one that was just talking about how she said her libido went down and she didn't want it to. That's not something she wanted. And she just almost mourned that. And her husband was so supportive. That was so nice. So many of these had supportive spouses. Not all of them.
Yeah,
not all of them. But so many of them had, I'm trying to think if it was Laura's story. I think Laura's story, L-A-R-A-S, was one that really stuck out. Just talking about the night sweats, the interrupted sleep, that one really did
affect you.
Stick out to me. And it was so funny. I was trying to find her husband's reactions to it.
We have a running theme that in this conversation, that for some reason, no matter what your symptoms are, you try to keep your spouse from waking up if you're having a night sweat or if you've had an accident, because that's the reality. You get heavy periods, you get accidents. And here you are, uncomfortable, miserable, and you're worried about your partner's sleeping
don't
habit.
Wake up the part. You'll have to hear
Don't Harriet. Upset the partner.
Yeah. You'll have to hear Harriet talk about one of her friends. But what about you?
My favorite is the first pages, five to seven of her second book, where she quotes Jennifer Kennedy, who's an author of Galloping Catastrophe, Musings of a Menopausal Woman. And she talks about what a man would feel like if he went through menopause. And she actually gives you examples of how you can strap thermal vests to your spouse. You can make them soak through with hot water bottles. You can have them tweeze their beard instead of shaving before they go to work. You can put mosquitoes in the bed so you scratch for an hour or so. Go to the toilet every half hour. Afternoon, you pick up a family-sized bar of chocolate and scoff it down to get some energy. But I think my favorite, and I'm really hoping we can say this on air, I think so. Mm-hmm. In the evening, allow your partner to rub your genitals with coarse sandpaper for a long, long time. How many women suffer from vaginal dryness?
And that's
if you want, you know, or to smoke five joints and take two sleeping tablets with cold remedy medicine. And that'll give you a little idea on brain fog.
After you read that, I'm picturing in my mind, remember the pregnancy suits they would have guys to put on? Like, this is how it feels. They need a menopause suit.
Yes, they do. But it would be from head to toe.
It would be from head to toe.
Constrict your brain for a migraine.
Kind of like those compression things that will just come and go. Like, have you ever had something where they put it on you and they make compression start and then take away?
Like a massage chair.
Yeah, but this is not a massage. This is more needles. You're getting little injections.
Or when you get a blood pressure and it's too tight.
So we'll need, we need to invent the menopause sympathy suit.
Exactly. Like when they go in labor and they have men, the electrodes to their stomachs. That's what we need for cramping for women. Just make them walk around in a fog. Although just put fog and
will
glasses.
Have sandpaper, like for the crotch.
Private. Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Sandpaper but, there. Just so take become, little hammers. Little hammers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Bridget and I are definitely coming up with some products that might be ending up in our shop. But as you can see, once women start to communicate, the story's just come out. So we have a great conversation with Harriet. Hope you enjoy it. And we will talk to you after it's done.
Hello, everybody. Today we have with us Harriet Powell, and we're so excited to have her here. She's written two really great books that are very helpful for women, the Menopause Monologues. So they're just great stories about a lot of different women's experiences with menopause. So we want to welcome Harriet, first of all. Thank you so much
Thank
for coming.
Thank you. Thank you. It's really brilliant to be with you.
Oh, thanks so much. And it's just such an interesting way that you got started into this and how this just came about. She's also written a young adult book. And probably, have you written children's books as well? I know you wrote a young adult book.
Yeah, no, really, my children's books are for 9 to 12-year-olds.
Okay, yeah.
And I've written about six of those.
Yeah, and you were a former professional singer, is that correct? Do you still sing?
I still sing, absolutely.
You still sing?
I juggle my writing and my singing.
That's amazing. I think that's amazing because I am the world's worst singer.
We should have requested a little too much.
We should have. But then came into this, and can you just share how you decided to come into doing this
writing
story?
These books?
Of course. Well, I was on my way to an author event, a children's books author event, and I was driving too far. I was doing a long journey, and we have a program over here. I don't know whether you know it, over in the US, called Woman's Hour. And it broadcasts every day, every weekday. Mm-hmm. And it's a sort of magazine program on the radio covering a load of women's topics. And this particular Monday, this particular week, in fact, which was back in January 2018, they were having a menopause week. So they were giving the whole week over to talking about the menopause. And on this first day, on this Monday, they were doing a phone-in. And so they were asking all sorts of women for their menopause stories. So this is back 2 years ago. And I think a lot has changed in 2 years. So I think if we'd been having this conversation 2 years ago, the menopause wouldn't have been aired so much. And I was so shocked at the stories that were coming over the airwaves. I mean, people's stories showed such struggle and such misery. There were a few positive ones, but generally, it was like an on-air therapy session that for the first time, people were being allowed to say the awful things that they felt, and especially things that were happening at work and not being understood. So I pulled the car over because I knew I was just going to have an accident. It was so absorbing. Mm-hmm. And listened to the whole program and then went off, did my day, came back. And I thought, do you know what? People need more of a voice. And I thought, okay, I've got my children's books, but why don't I use my married name to get in touch with women, all sorts of women, start just with friends, because just because they're friends doesn't mean they've got any less story to tell, and ask them whether they would write their story. And so I started that evening. And I think out of 35 people that I asked, I had only one refusal, and everybody wanted to join in. And once I started, it was almost had to fend people off and say, no, I've got enough stories now.
Oh,
and in
wow.
the end, I had, as you know, in the end, I had to compile a second book. So that's how it started.
And I think that's so wonderful, too, because it just makes women feel like I'm not alone. And, just reading the stories in your book, it's just, some had similar things. Some had something different happen.
Yep.
But it does. Just reading it was like, yeah, that happened to me. This situation happened to me. Maybe one didn't. And then that was something like, wow, I didn't know that that came along with menopause. So I think it's just a wonderful way to share. And just within the past 7-8 months since Colleen and I started doing this podcast, I've learned so much about it. And I feel freer to talk about it because I've heard other women talk about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. If somebody in any topic in life, if you if you're honest and you're vulnerable, mm-hmm. what it does is make other people open up to you about their experiences. So I encourage everybody. Everybody said to me, "What do you want? What do you want me to say?" And I just said, "Just tell your story. Mm-hmm. Just be honest. All we mm-hmm. want is you to be, for you to be honest." Interestingly, for the first book, I assumed that everybody would want to be anonymous. I don't know why. I sort of thought, well, some of this is quite private stuff. One person in the first book said to me, "Do you know what? I really don't mind." She's Sarah in the first book. She was mm-hmm. undergoing cancer mm-hmm. Treatment. And she just said, "You know what? This is the menopause. My menopausal symptoms, they're not very nice, but I'm really not worried about them in comparison with what I'm going through. So just call me Sarah. I'm Sarah. I don't need mm-hmm. to hide." But for the second book, 85%, I think, between 80 and 85% of the contributors wanted to use their real names. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just such testimony to how people are sharing it more and how people do want to open up about it and how mm-hmm. things have changed in 2 years.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, in just a year, right, between the books, almost 2019. Yes. So the fact that just in a year that much, because I know with the second book, I liked the whole book, but I really liked number one, the first, I have to read a couple of these because I adored them.
Yes.
So in the very beginning, and of course I'm like right here and I can't find the very beginning, but
right.
Okay, here. So Jennifer's story is a story about what you know because you wrote it, but if you want to have a man feel what it's like to go through menopause, and you give 2 pages worth of tips, and some of the tips are start the experiment at about 10 p.m., go to bed with a thermal vest, 4 jumpers with hot water bottles between each layer, and keep your electric blanket on full. Once you're soaked through with sweat, get up and change the bedclothes and yourself. Try not to wake your partner while doing this, and repeat at least 3 times a night. I mean, how true is that for women who suffer from night sweats? You're drenched, and you're trying to make sure that your partner does not wake up. Like, that should mm-hmm. be the least of your concerns, right?
I love that. I love that story. And quite, you shouldn't be worrying about your partner. And before you read that next bit, I remember...
No, it's fine.
There's a bit in the first book. It is Iona's story. Again, she says... She said, "A thick sanitary towel and a super tampon weren't enough, and I'd frequently wake up in a wet puddle in the wee small hours. I had to master the art of cleaning up a trail of blood on the carpet from the bed to the bathroom by phone light without waking my husband."
Yes.
Think, don't care about the husband.
I know.
Isn't it amazing? Our nature as women is still to make sure we inconvenience anybody else.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I interrupted. You were going to read another one.
No, that's fine. I love hearing the thoughts behind it and supplements to it. Ensure you are recording all the things that you're worried about. Set your alarm for 3 a.m. and listen to them for 2 hours. I mean, honestly, Bridget knows I wake up at 3 a.m. every morning thinking, okay, today's out. And you just run through the list.
Yes.
And it's make your man do that, or woman, whoever your partner may be.
Yeah.
But, and I'm pretty sure we're PG, but I'm pretty sure this is okay. Smoke 5 joints and take 2 sleeping tablets, plus a swig of that cold remedy that makes you sleep a lot. That might give you some way up to understand the brain fog symptom. Any woman who has been through brain fog, and Bridget and I say all the time, brain fog moment, brain fog.
Yeah.
Moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's scary though, isn't it? The brain fog.
Oh, it is.
Again, in the first book, I'm not remembering exactly. It's Helen, mm-hmm. in her story, she talks of pulling up beside some traffic lights. And mm-hmm. once they'd turned green, she couldn't, for about 15 or 20 seconds, remember where she was. She couldn't mm-hmm. remember which direction to go in. She didn't even know where she was. And terrifying, actually, really mm-hmm. terrifying.
Yeah.
And quite a few of the women in both books talk about how they got so worried about the brain fog that they actually thought that it wasn't brain fog, but some sort of early onset dementia.
Dementia. And Colleen,
I
swore to myself, I'm like, I have early onset dementia because I could not pull words from my brain. Like, I knew what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
but from the brain to the mouth, it just would not process.
Yeah. And it will be a simple word, like in your book where you said the lady couldn't remember what a kettle was called, which I am actually surprised right now I remembered it was a kettle. Like, what did she say? She said, that thing that makes tea. And,
It is so scary, isn't it? Because I'm certainly used to being sharp. And my brain being sharp, my brain fog is better now. I mean, I'm now 50 and I'm not quite through the menopause, but I would say when I was about 46, 47, that was my worst time of brain fog. Mm-hmm. And I remember just trying to remember the name of a friend's son and not being able to get it for not just seconds, but for probably about half an hour.
Yes. Yeah.
and it's frightening.
It really is so relatable, but just hearing everyone's story and just even like you said, 2 years ago, before we really started to dig into this topic, I was embarrassed to admit that. I didn't want to talk about that. I thought maybe it happened to some people, but it's probably worse for me. And then just being able to hear these stories, I think it just puts so much anxiety at bay. For lots of women, at this age.
And that's really what it is.
Big relief. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
It's starting the conversation. Because once we have also found that once you start the conversation, women do open up.
I think you're absolutely. But before all this virus stuff kicked off, back in February, I'd been asked to facilitate a couple of menopause events over here in the UK. People who really weren't used to talking about it. And I remember them walking into the room. There was a GP and I was there as well. So me and the GP and about 8 or 10 women who really weren't used to talking about the menopause. And just over a period of 2 hours, it was as if everything just thawed and melted and everyone talked. And it was so lovely. Wonderful feeling. So things are improving.
And we have found, Colleen and I have said this so much, that the UK seems to be ahead of the United States in bringing menopause to the forefront and sharing it and talking about it. And we're such a large country, and there's just very few doctors that specialize in this. Yeah. Very few even gynecologists are informed about menopause. Yeah, they're very informed with obstetrics and delivering babies and the early stages, or maybe adolescence and your early stages of going through female cycles and going through periods. But menopause is not as much addressed. And we're hoping we've met so many wonderful women from the UK that are really bringing this to the forefront that we're hoping to get this when this coronavirus is over, get them over here. But at least talking to you and talking to people, just having podcasts like this and being able to do this through Zoom.
Get the conversation.
Get this going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I still think I call myself on Twitter at the little taboo. So it's taboo. Yeah. And I still think that there is an element of it being taboo. I think it's hugely improved over here. But Jenny Murray, who is the big Woman's Hour person who was hosting she and Jane Garvey were hosting the Woman's Hour program that got me started with this. They were amazed at how taboo it was and how much shame was still attached to it. But that was 2 years ago. And like I keep saying, things have definitely improved. But there were one or two people who sort of said, oh, menopause, oh no, I don't talk about that. And the one person who I said didn't want to contribute a monologue, her reason was because she said she didn't want to be reminded that she was close to death. And I thought,
like, you're not close to death.
Ordinary. I thought, life is just beginning.
Absolutely. I hope that woman hears podcasts and talks and realizes that she is not close to death.
There is a connection to the conversation of menopause with aging that I think some women are just not ready to, because we have heard, and several of your stories will attest to this, that women were like, I'm only 41. I'm only 43. Yeah, I'm too young. Yes. But this is a natural process. It's not necessarily age related, because some women have surgical menopause. Some women have side effects of treatment. So it's so connected to an age range that women feel like, if I talk menopause, I talk aging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just not like that. And I was amazed when I first started writing down friends. I sort of thought who might contribute. I thought, well, who do I know who's roughly my age, or maybe 5 years older, 10 years older? And then I started realizing that actually I could go 10 years younger than me and still find people who were either experiencing early menopauses or had already gone through it. I was amazed, mm-hmm. really amazed. And there's somebody who, is it Joyce in the second book? Just find it. She says something so lovely. She says, "Postmenopause gives us freedom from our reproductive ties. No more periods, no more premenstrual syndrome, no more contraception. For me, my 50s have been the most productive years of my life. My mind seems sharper than it's ever been. I'm so full of ideas. I'm more level and I'm calmer." Mm-hmm. And there are quite a lot of stories that are full of that sort of positivity. And it was important to me that, of course, there are the terrible stories in both books. There are mm-hmm. some real eye-openers. It was really important for me to show that there's a really positive side too. And that, you know, it's a real kind of time for awakening as well.
It is, yeah. And
many of the stories also say, you know, now that I'm on the back end, now that I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's important for women to understand that this is not permanent.
Yeah.
That, yes, you may still have symptoms. Every woman is different. But it does get better. And when you're in the middle of it, you know, the running themes that I have noticed in a lot of the reading that I've done, and Bridget, you can say whether you have as well, is that mm-hmm. number one, it takes years to get diagnosed. You go to many yep. doctors. You don't even think it's menopause until usually a friend says something like, "Could this be menopause?"
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and two,
absolutely.
It's temporary. Even if, you know,
yes.
some women it's a couple of years, some women it's a decade, but you
yes.
get over it.
No, absolutely. And I'm just thinking about, and particularly in the second book, there are quite a few women who talk about the fact that they went to doctors and kept presenting these particular symptoms. And each symptom had a diagnosis, but very few doctors would put all of the symptoms together as a package and realize that it pointed to menopause. Just thinking, who is it? And I think it was
Karen. There are several
story.
In here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, there
the
are.
The fact
several.
That you can remember the names of each
That one. Is amazing, because there are so many stories, yeah.
Karen says this. Karen, in the second book, says, "There was always an explanation for each symptom, but never a look at the symptoms as a package. The sweats were apparently because I'd been living in Riyadh at the time, even though I argued that I kept the air conditioning set to Glasgow temperatures. When the flushes continued in Germany, I was treated for hyperhidrosis and everything dried up except the flushes. My insomnia, I was told, was because I had two small children and no one gets much sleep, etc., etc." And it was 16 years before she got a diagnosis, because she started in her 30s. And it's very easy to feel angry, really, isn't it, mm-hmm. under those circumstances?
Absolutely, it is. You know, and I've had, I think, I don't know, Colleen, if I can't remember if you've said you had a similar experience, but the first time I wanted to deal with this, it was a female gynecologist, and she kind of was brushing it all aside. Like, she didn't believe that I was probably 46 or 47. And she was like, "Oh, you can't be going through menopause. You're too young." And I was like, "Well, my mother was 43, you know, so, you know, yeah. I think I could be." And then she did the blood work. "Oh, okay. Yeah. Your follicle
yeah.
level is high or whatever.
But you had to drive it, didn't
I
you?
Had to push it. And actually, she still, I was hesitant, like many women in your books were, about HRTs. I was hesitant yeah. for a few years, but I did yeah. finally start on bioidentical. And then when I read stories from your book, how it's so difficult, like the one woman, and I can't remember the name, that they quit making her brand of HRT. And
yes.
she couldn't get what she was on anymore.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
and I've heard that that is also an issue that had been going on in the UK.
It was a big issue. It's been a big issue in the last year. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm not on HRT, although I don't necessarily, I may go on it if
right.
I need. I'm not. My mind is becoming more open to it,
mm-hmm.
Especially since I've written the menopause monologues, both books, and talked to various GPs.
Mm-hmm.
I think partly it's the risk thing is an issue,
yes.
especially back in the early 2000s yeah. when people were worried about the breast cancer mm-hmm. risk, even though that breast cancer risk is so small.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, for me, it's almost more worry about the side effects, not the risk, mm-hmm. but the side effects, things like acne, spots, bloating, weight gain, headaches. Now, perhaps those would all settle down in the first, I think some people mm-hmm. find that they settle down, but I'm mm-hmm. a little bit nervous about those, but not yeah. so nervous that I won't give it a go, if I feel like the time yeah. comes.
And I think that's such an individual decision, you know, yeah. And what, and plus it's your background and what has gone on in your family and genetics and everything that goes along with that. But yeah, it has been good for me right now. Yeah. And then the one woman in your book that is 73 and is still on, I guess it was estrogen. Was she still on that? I can't remember exactly, but I was like, she's still on it. She's 73, you know, we've interviewed a gynecologist that is just a big proponent of that. She calls it the glue. It's Dr. Liz Lister, and she calls it kind of the glue that kind of holds everything together, that gives you those feelings, maternal feelings or any feeling like that. But
any feelings.
Yeah.
I think the other reason why I might consider it is that, quite apart from, you know, reinstating all the estrogen, whatever, that it also gives protective qualities, like against stroke, I think, against heart disease. They think probably against dementia.
Right. I was going to say memory loss.
And against things like osteoporosis. So this GP who works with me facilitating these events, on her flip chart, she explains how one or whatever it is in every 1,000 women would perhaps develop breast cancer on HRT, mm-hmm. but far more without HRT would go on to have a fall, break bones in their late 70s, 80s, 90s, thereby mm-hmm. ruining their lives, basically. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something that's coming to the forefront more, and people understanding that not only might it restore your libido and stop the hot flushes and all of that, but it actually might have some quite important long-term positive effects too. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely there in my mind at the moment. I'm just a bit of a one paracetamol a year sort of girl.
Well, and you've got to do what's comfortable, you know, for you. Yeah. You have to do that. And I also appreciate in the book, when you brought up libido, I appreciated all the women that just came out and said, look, I wish that I still had a very strong libido, but I don't. It's not what it was. And I had that two different times in my life. Like after I had my second child, it was like, what is happening to me? I was only 27. And I remember talking to my doctor about that. And they just were like, oh, well, like this was in the 1990s. And they just kind of brushed me completely off. Like, well, there's nothing you can do about that. Let's get this. The men, they're Viagra, but you can't have anything. And I was like, well, okay. And then, you know, it was probably after having the child and all the hormones flying everywhere. But, and then when I started to go through menopause again is when I was like, okay, this is happening again. This time, finally, I was prescribed a cream testosterone. Yeah. So, and that was very helpful. But just that's another thing I appreciate in your book. Is all the women that address this.
Honest about it. Although there is, of course, the person towards the end of the second book, Lucy, who experiences a libido spike. And she's really the odd one out. But wow, it's so interesting to read it, isn't it? Just before her 47th birthday, she suddenly realizes she wants to be going out nightclubbing and realizes she is wildly attracted to every single man she sets eyes on. And she just can't get enough in the 6 months that it lasts. She's definitely the odd one out. As you say, most people are mourning the loss of their libido and are very honest about it.
Yes. Yeah. I think I know one person like Lucy, just one person in my life that is brought out saying, oh, it's a trick. You get, your libido goes up and then your husband's is down. And I was like, what? I don't know what planet you're on, but yes. Wow.
I also like a lot, Harriet, that at the end of your second book, you have the helpful resources and contacts.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so you offer books and blogs and groups and organizations for support.
Yes.
We've actually interviewed several of the people that you've listed here, which is lovely, like Claire Shepherd, Menopause Campaign, Become Clothing. We've been in touch with Rachel, and truly am jealous of the fact that England seems to be about a year ahead of the curve. And we recently interviewed Dee Gardner from Menopause Experts, which is another company.
Yep.
And the fact that you have retreats that you can go to and just talk openly and honestly, there's nothing like that in the States. There's you don't go to menopause retreats. You can go to retreats, but not menopause retreats.
No.
And it's not until women start talking about it like it's in a normal conversation that we're going to break that stigma and taboo against midlife changes in general. It's not just menopause. It's empty nesting. It's career changes. It's your, you know, mental wellness and anxiety. There's so much there that I appreciate the fact that you've compiled this group of real women, because I think that's more effective. A lot of times
it's not celebrity, is it? It's not a group of not a load of celebrities. It's just real women. And that's what I wanted. I wanted just, don't like to use the word ordinary, because none of us is ordinary, but real women.
Exactly. And also not just a doctor's book, not that there's anything wrong with the doctor's book, but I think that's intimidating for some women. Read doctor's, you know, so-and-so's book on menopause, and you're like, oh, I don't even understand chapter two. So the fact is, it's real women. Also, I do love the fact that you're donating half of the proceeds to Shelter. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, Shelter's just always been close to my heart. As a family, I've got four children, and every Christmas we go to Chester Cathedral to go and sing on Christmas Eve. And on the walk back from Chester Cathedral to the car, everything, all the shops at that point have shut after the cathedral service, and the streets are just lined with homeless people. And it's just it's a dark moment on Christmas Eve for me. It always has been. And I wanted to do something positive with the menopause books, and I wanted to give half the profits to a charity. And I just thought Shelter would be a great choice. Quite a lot of people said, no, it should be to a specific women's charity. And I thought, well, there are plenty of women who are homeless who, I mean, can you imagine being menopausal and homeless and, you know, a bad combination? It actually took quite a long time to get Shelter to wake up and realize I was actually trying to help them. But when eventually a wonderful woman who runs the Manchester branch got in touch, she was so positive about it, and she has written the foreword to the second book. Mm-hmm. So every month I plow half my profits into Shelter, and they get a little monthly check. And
That's wonderful.
It's just such a nice feeling, such a good feeling.
And that it's so wonderful. And
thank you for doing that. That's paying it forward and feeling like you're making a difference for women, and then also for a charity. That's like icing on the
that is, you know. That is. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Good. Yeah. Thank you so much, Harriet, for coming on today and talking about the menopause monologues, part one and two. You can get
it's
it
a
on.
Pleasure.
You can get it on Amazon. We'll have all the information in the show notes and all the links to where you can get the books. And please get them, because they really do make you feel like you're less alone and that you're not going insane.
And a fun, it's great little short stories, different women's
very
experiences. Easy to read.
Just a lot of aha moments. Yes. Like, that's me. Oh, that's me.
Yeah.
You see yourself.
And even a few men's takes.
That's right. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And the first couple things that you talk about in Jennifer's story to make a man feel like what it's like to go through menopause is worth buying the book alone. Just those two pages.
That whole thing needs to be on like towels and pillows.
And we need to video our husbands volunteering to do that. That would be awesome.
Absolutely.
Thanks again, Harriet, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much. I've loved it. Thank you.
Bye. Well, we want to thank Harriet so much for being on the show. I just loved the conversations. She's so easy to talk to. And just the feeling, once again, that you are not alone. When you read all of these women's stories, you're going to find connections. They're not all the same. They had different experiences. And there's also stories with men as well. And I think that...
Because they have to survive. Yeah,
they do have to survive that. And the more they know about what's going on with us and what to
expect. Unless you will want to poke their eyes out in the middle of the night.
and they will get the protection and the shields.
They'll know, like, danger.
Yeah, but they will be more understanding about what's going on with you. And so many of the men in the book were so such supportive spouses. And like I said before, not all of them were, but so many were very supportive.
And it's that was nice so nice to hear. Mm-hmm. But again, we talked about it and it just seems to be the same story. It takes years to figure out something that they should be able to notice instantly because, oh, 42 is too young, 45 is too young. No, it's so ridiculous that we're still attaching it to a particular age group when it's just a transition.
Yes. And a simple blood test could tell what's going on with you. And if you could, you know, if it would be available, if they would do it, then you would start to know something that is going on with you.
Men get their testosterone levels checked all the time.
They do.
So why can't we get our
testosterone? Yeah. So that's something too. I hope through our podcast and all of these other women that are bringing menopause to the forefront or just women's issues. It doesn't even have to be menopause, but women's issues. You just see when you're hearing and doing your research on this, wait a minute, insurance isn't covering that, but they're going to cover this for a man?
Right, exactly.
Oh my goodness.
We're going to have a whole episode on issues with insurance companies.
Oh my goodness. There's such a disparity. There's such a disparity.
Kind of like me trying to say testosterone.
Yes. There's a testosterone disparity. But there is such a disparity. But if you put things covered for men, things covered for women, what they consider necessary and right now,
the blue pill
is essential. But it is very unequal. So that needs to change. So we'd like to see that change too. Yes.
So we are going to definitely continue this conversation for a long, long time. We'll probably do some videos on it because we love to have other women talk and you know, thank you, Harriet, for opening that conversation of true stories. We appreciate it.
Yes.
Follow us, subscribe to us, follow us again, and then have someone else subscribe to us.
That's right.
And let your friends know. So everybody have a great week and we will talk to you next time.
Thanks. Bye.